What's the best way to affect change in a community? That's a question Raquel Castañeda López has been thinking about for a long time. She's the first ever Latina elected member of Detroit City Council, and she's been a fierce advocate for her constituents in Southwest Detroit.
But you know, in democracy, it's a team sport, right? So we all play different roles, and where I've been grateful the past 8 years, my role has been as an elected official. I think it's important that we have always new voices, new ideas at the table, and I will continue to play some other role on the team.
Today, Councilmember Castañeda López is going to talk to us about passing the torch to a new generation of progressive leaders and what she's learned about the interplay between activists and people in elected office. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. It is an election year in Michigan's largest city, and Detroit City Council will soon look much different. Four council members have announced that they will not seek re-election. And one of those is Raquel Castañeda López. And she joins us now. Raquel, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, over your time in public office, two terms, you've talked a lot about your family story and how it informed you going into public service. I have to ask, what did your mom say when you told her that you were not going to run for re-election this year?
My mom, I joke and say, you know, she's kind of like gangster old school there. So she first she scolded me that she had to find out through the news because I wasn't brave enough to call and tell her. She's like, why did I have to find out through the news? And I was like, and then second, she was like, you know, to her credit, and I know she's all coming from a place of love, is, you know, I don't really think you realize your impact, Raquel, and where's the commitment and integrity and stepping down now during these difficult times. And so, and sent me a whole bunch of other messages, which I just like skimmed over. And I just have been sending her all the positive comments from Facebook and Instagram. I'm like, look, mom, you can be proud. I think it's going to take her a little bit of time to digest. And I think like any parent, especially for women and women of color specifically, they know the danger in going into public office. I mean, during my last re-election campaign, people literally came to my house. And so I know it's always been hard for her to see me in that public role and be subject to so many types of attacks. So I'm sure there's some sense of relief and happiness, and she'll be proud, you know, sometime next year when it's all when it's all done and she can fully digest it. But it's a process. It's still a process.
Will you tell us about making the decision not to run again?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly speaking, it was probably back in December of 2019. I was listening to one of the Brené Brown, she's a fellow social worker, one of her audiobooks on daring to lead and just the different roles that we can play in different spaces. And I think that's when I started thinking about, well, what is the role that I want to play, continue to play? And do I need to be in this role to impact and see the type of change I'd like to see? And I think when the pandemic hit, and then really more so the civil uprising as a result of George Floyd's murder, just kind of highlighted to me how much I really love and value, I think, just human connection, the ability to, like, you know, form coalitions, the power of listening and empathy. And not to say that you can't do these things in the role of a council member, but there is some skepticism about being an elected official because there's a lot of harm and a lot of, you know, historical oppression by governments towards immigrant communities and communities of colors. And so a lot of activists will approach me, despite my background in social work or organizing, you know, with some skepticism and, you know, not 100% sure about what my intentions and such are. And so part of me is wanting to go back to that type of work without having to, you know, filter what I say all the time, believe it or not, or not having to be pulled away by showing up at council table, which is important in and of itself. I think for me, it's really about wanting to be truly embedded 100% in community. This position has definitely given me the privilege and the leverage to be able to do that in different ways. And so that was kind of my thought process and where the decision came. Definitely very, very difficult. And even today, you know, I was excited and some sense of relief. It was public. And today I was like, oh, what did I do? So, you know, always going back and forth about the decision. But I am happy. I'm excited about, you know, I don't know what my next step is. And I'm just trying to be open and curious about it. But I know I can only control my own transition. And I'm super excited for Gabriela Santiago Romero, who I've, recruited and endorsed. And for the next phase, because, there's four of us that are stepping down. And so I'm excited. I hope that I've pushed the envelope and set the tone for what we can deserve as Detroiters. And I hope people step up to that plate in this next cycle of council.
The more I think about it, Detroit has been through such a ride that coincides with the time that you stepped into office. You know, when you first ran, the city was in the midst of this, still lots of needs, but a gradual upswing in terms of the face of downtown, investment from some folks outside the city and some folks in. And then this brick wall that we all hit in 2020. How would you say what people look to you for has been changing over this time, including but not limited to the pandemic?
For sure. I mean, I think when I first was elected, my sweet naivete in my early 30s when I jumped in, I think really was almost like stepping onto a ship entering a storm or continuing into, a storm. And so, yes, it's been kind of putting out fires all over the place and trying to provide some stability and constants for residents. And I think the pandemic, two things, of course, highlighted the incredible social inequities and inequities within our budget and how we allocate resources, and highlighted what I love and am so proud of in terms of being a native Detroiter is the resiliency and the spirit and the strength of our legacy Detroiters and just the power of human connection. And so, prior to the pandemic, we worked with community leaders throughout the district. And I did want to clarify, I represent District 6, which is Southwest is just one portion. I always have to correct folks.
Right. Thank you.
It's downtown, midtown, Corktown, it's Midwest, it's Chadsey Condon, it's Boynton Schaefer, Delray, et cetera, et cetera. Because if I let that pass, I will get scolded. And also too, I want those neighborhoods to be recognized and be honored. But I think we had built relationships with folks and those were just further strengthened. We got to know folks more on a human level. People would check in on my staff and I and being like, hey, how are you all doing? And we would share personal stories that we hadn't before. And it was really beautiful and really powerful. And I think just showed me the power of this spirit of Detroiters, and our level of connection only deepened and strengthened. So I think that also played into wow, I really love this aspect of the role and this aspect of the work and want to be able to commit more time to it. But it was about connecting people to basic services and resources, which I think is so key and so fundamental. Oftentimes in politics, people get caught up in the sexiness of creating jobs or what's sensational in the news of some type of economic development deal or things or policy ideas they want to move forward that, again, have importance. But we lose sight of, addressing people at the basic level and meeting their basic needs and helping them live with dignity in that way, which I think comes first and is super, super important. So I think it kind of rerouted me in the importance of that type of work during the pandemic. And just showed me the power of community and human connection. I mean, it was exhausting. Literally, I don't know, I would not even eat some days because I was on Zoom and I lost 15 pounds. And it was residents who gave me the strength to kind of just push through and reminded me to take care of myself. And it was just really beautiful and really humbling.
It's time for a quick break. In just a minute, Raquel Castañeda Lopez talks to us about dealing with sexism and racism in Detroit city politics. We'll be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
couple of years ago, you raised some concerns about how you were treated in the context of council. There has been some friction with some other members, Scott Benson and Andre Spivey. And at the time, you said you were feeling currents of racial animosity, currents of sexual harassment. And that led to a 2019 investigation of the dynamics on council, which did not draw the same conclusions. In hindsight, what do you want people to know about how council works today?
Yeah, you know, as I stated before, like I've always been either the first or the only Latina in I think the majority of the settings my entire life. So I'm no stranger to discrimination or to racism or to sexism or to ageism or to heightism, you know, all the isms that play out in the different facets of my identity. And so I've disagreed with the results of the study. Also, the report wasn't based on my concerns. It was based on Council President Jones' interpretation of the concerns, which I think is important. And so I didn't request the report from CREO. It was something that Council President Jones requested. And so in all honesty, it existed since day one. And I think where it's been portrayed as me and my individual issues, it really is pervasive in that my first year on council, there were at least three or four offices who young women from other staff would come to share because they felt comfortable with my team, where they felt that they were being sexually discriminated against or being harassed. Or it was just an environment where, you know, they would come in and be looked up and down and say, oh, people would say, I just came in to get my fill for the day with, you know, they're looking at these young women. Or I even witnessed my own staff leaving the building and experiencing the same types of things. And so I think it's ignorance. I think it's an old school mentality that is pervasive in politics, right? That as women, again, especially young women of color, you're there to kind of please other people. You're supposed to be quiet and not question. And I think for me in this role as a leader, it was kind of like, who do you go to? Where do you go? How do you address these things? And so it's my job. It's my job as a woman of color to make sure that I am not remaining silent myself and that I'm speaking up for other women of color who have experienced this around the country and to make sure we're changing the system. So I will actually be presenting in the next couple of months an amendment to the rules to require that all council members and their staff go through mandatory training on an annual basis around sexual harassment, around implicit bias, around working with our most vulnerable communities in the disability community and the LGBTQ community and the immigrant community, because it's about developing that awareness and that empathy to be able to best serve residents of the city of Detroit.
Was the way you were treated part of your decision when you decided to leave?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, there's always different things that you wish you could change and you wish would have been better, right? But absolutely not. For me, it was again about, you know, what is the work that truly brings me joy? What are the settings that I want to be in? And really how I approach and believe our democracy should work is that to truly have a reflective, inclusive democracy, you should have some change in leadership. And make sure that leadership is definitely rooted in the values of racial justice and social equity. And also it allows me to play a role in some other regards. So that's really where the decision was coming from.
Raquel, you've been a strong ally to the Black Lives Matter movement and Detroit Will Breathe and other groups. Do you worry about leaving at a time when momentum is still building for change?
Well, see, this is a question my mom is asking me now. So, I think this is also another piece that played into my decision. It's what role do I want to be in terms of being a part of this larger movement to impact systemic change? And where can I best serve? And so that definitely weighed into my decision. But I, again, am confident in Gabriela Santiago Romero and other folks like, you know, Pro Tem Mary Sheffield, who will continue to serve in leading that charge in the council aspect. So that I can step into a space and continue to really focus on building those coalitions around the types of policy changes they would like to see in the community space and through building, I think, community power, which I think is something that's still desperately needed in the city of Detroit, and to supporting other candidates citywide in other district seats and at the clerk in the mayoral race, who will fight and champion for those same things. So As I said in my statement, it was never just about me or one politician. It's about the collective we and our shared movement for social justice and racial equity. And you need people in all seats across the city to be able to truly move those policies forward, not just in District 6.
Well, that kind of leads me to the last thing I wanted to ask you. You've said that it's still kind of an open page. You don't have anything lined up just yet, but you do say that you're going into advocacy. What was it about being in elected office that you'll take with you going forward?
I think so much learning, so many lessons. I think I learned, being on the inside, quote unquote, about the power of listening, again, I think is really important from both sides, is really knowing and understanding the elected officials that represent you, and vice versa, the elected officials understanding the wants and the needs of the community. And so I really think I've been effective in my role, if I can say this, in building bridges and building coalitions and bringing together people in the same space. And that, I think, is one of the most important first steps in leadership. And I hope to leverage the knowledge that I've gained of, how to navigate the system to get legislation passed, drafting legislation, to move forward resolutions and, different community-driven initiatives, to bring that to the advocacy world and to try to build bridges between the two. Because it's not just about getting folks who are progressive elected. You also need the grassroots movement. You need the progressive policies. And you need those three all working collectively to really impact change. And I think in the city, we have some really great policy ideas. We have some really amazing organizations, and that we're missing the connection with elected officials. But I think the other piece is holding elected officials accountable in a way that that's continual and not just around campaign cycles. It's really about switching how we approach campaigns and elections from this transactional type of way of, vote for me and I'll give you this kind of quid pro quo, to really transformational, about investing in leaders, developing power within neighborhoods, and supporting that leadership on a continual, consistent basis that doesn't just happen every 4 years. And I think there's a lot of just education building that can go around that. So residents know what they truly deserve. And I do think they deserve elected officials who will listen, who will see them, value them, hear them, who are committed to sitting on their front porches for an hour to listen to their stories without some type of, objective in mind to get them to vote yes on this issue or that issue, but simply to honor what their needs are and to fight for those at a very basic level.
Raquel Castañeda Lopez of Detroit City Council. Raquel, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Dair. You can find the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's episode was produced by April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.